The calendar and the temperature should have given you enough hints, but the sound of studded tires on bare pavement, there's no other sound like it, should have told you that winter's coming. And with the season, the unbridled joy of driving in conditions that fog the windshield, glaze the roads, and chill the bones. Our next guest can't help you with the bones, but he knows a few things about cars and their treatment and handling. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive, and he has a few ideas on car and driver prep for winter. Zach, always good to see you. Thanks for coming back.
It's good to see you too, Jeff. Thanks.
And you got your Cubs cap on, so I can tell you're a happy guy these days.
Very happy. It's been a good year.
Indeed. Let's talk about that when we get into this part of the year when things get cold. And I guess the first thing I've wondered for a while, not being much of a car worker myself, is whether in this age of car computers and fuel injection without carburetors, whether cars even need tune-ups anymore?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We get calls regarding that same question very regularly. And what the tune-up that you're speaking about, the modern equivalent of that is scheduled maintenance. And so car manufacturers create a maintenance schedule. For instance, Toyota, a Toyota 4Runner has a maintenance schedule unique to that vehicle. And it's published, and we utilize that information to advise the customer on the needs of the car. So at 30,000 miles, that 4Runner is going to be required to have, you know, for example, spark plugs changed, transmission fluid changed, an engine oil change, and maybe a cabin air filter. And so by sticking to that maintenance schedule set forth by the manufacturer, that is, in essence, a tune-up. And so the manufacturer sets that schedule based off of all sorts of things that the engineers have decided need to happen at a certain time. And one of the most common things we're seeing nowadays is catalytic converter failures. So we ask the question, why are catalytic converters failing so frequently? And a lot of times we see spark plugs that are in this maintenance schedule back to the tune-up. You know, the spark plugs used to be changed every 10,000 miles or 15,000 miles. Well, nowadays some spark plugs last 75,000 miles and some last 30,000. It all goes back to the design of the spark plug. And when the manufacturers say to change those spark plugs, it's very important that the driver change the spark plugs, because the technician can pull the plug out and look at it and think, well, this thing looks fine.
Mm-hmm.
But on a microscopic level, what's happening is the combustion efficiency inside the engine has been reduced. And that leads to a catalytic converter having to work harder to clean up unburnt fuel.
So you've essentially beaten the catalytic converter to death by putting out dirty discharge from the engine.
Yep. And so the longer we're in this business, we realize, you know, maintenance schedules need to be stuck to, and car repair is very expensive. So catalytic converter replacement is extremely expensive.
And how much does that part tend to run?
Well, it's different for every car, and lots of cars don't do well with an aftermarket catalytic converter. So you're kind of forced to buy the factory converter. And, you know, I own a car right now myself, a Subaru. For a couple of years there, Subaru used three catalytic converters on the car. And so that part wholesale, those three converters, is $1,700.
Ouch.
Just wholesale. So, and that's not installed. Mm-hmm. So it can add up very, very quickly.
Zach Edwards, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the owner of Ashland Automotive. We're talking about cars and how to get them ready for winter. Here's your chance to get on a car talk question about what's going on with your vehicle. 800-838-3760 over the phone. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. So when you talk about the maintenance schedules, though, it seems like, I mean, those are fairly standard, aren't they? Like you're going to get a 6,000 and a 15,000 and a 30,000, that sort of thing?
Yep. They're pretty standard. I mean, every car has that maintenance schedule, but what is on the schedule is different depending on the vehicle. So each car, you know, has a different engine and transmission configuration. And so the needs of that particular powertrain are unique to that particular powertrain. So another misperception is that, you know, customers think that schedule and that maintenance outline is kind of a, you know, not necessary. It's a little overkill. But the longer we're doing this, as I mentioned before, the more we realize how critical that is. And when you perform that maintenance schedule, those customers that do that regularly are usually rewarded with a much more positive car owner experience.
No, so problems that you see at 110,000 miles, if they'd been handled in the regular maintenance at 90,000, wouldn't have been issues.
Right. And also, you know, customers come in with a concern, you know, my car is doing this or my car is doing that. Oftentimes, once we chase down the problem, which is, you know, pretty difficult nowadays, we determine if we had done the maintenance schedule, that problem would have been discovered in the performance of the actual maintenance item. So
you're from someplace cold, right? I mean, so you're
yep, I was born in northern Minnesota.
I thought it was Minnesota. Okay,
yep.
So used to driving in cold conditions. I mean, obviously cars have changed a bit since you've been out on the West Coast with milder winters. But what are the things that people need to do just in terms of getting a car ready for winter or getting themselves ready for driving in winter conditions?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. You know, just seeing your regular shop on a regular basis is just a really good idea. And if your shop is doing what they specialize in doing, which is, you know, helping you take care of your car, they're going to make good recommendations as to what your car is going to need. And a couple of those things that I would think would be suggested is, you know, making sure that the coolant or the antifreeze is in good condition. You know, the antifreeze is not only does it keep your engine cool, keeps it from freezing, but it's also a rust inhibitor. So if it's weak in the mixture, it's generally is a 50% water, 50% ethylene glycol. If that mixture gets weakened or ages out, then one of the results is rust formation inside your engine. And so that's one thing. Another thing is, you know, tires. Tires are such a huge safety consideration, and we always take a look at a car's tires when they come in. Even though we don't sell tires, it's just such a huge thing. And a lot of times people, you know, drivers are busy with their lives. They're working, they're taking their kids to school, or they're doing what they do. And it's I don't know if they can be expected to be looking at their tires. And so that's why that relationship with their regular shop should really serve them and add value to their life. It's like they trust their shop to tell them what the car needs.
Let's go a little further with tires, because it tends to happen with me. If I don't keep a car in alignment, I'll notice that the tire wear is uneven, but I won't notice that until I've actually taken the car in and said, mm-hmm. Hey, do I need new tires here? And they'll point out, well, you see how it's all worn here on the inside, but not so much on the outside. So, I mean, how best to check for irregularities in tire wear like that?
Well, again, you know, the shop should be looking at that for you. But yeah, what they're a lot of times they can a technician can feel the tread with his hand, and he can just feel irregular wear patterns that wouldn't probably be visible to you or to a regular driver. If the wear pattern is visible to you, then it's probably extreme, and at that point, the tire, you know, there's not much hope for that particular tire if you can see the wear pattern is that bad. But it is a great idea. Tires are kind of could be seen as an investment. And if you spend $1,000 on a set of good tires, you want to make sure to get your car's the alignment checked. It might not need to be adjusted, but you know, once a year or once every 2 years, you could stop by and just say, hey, can you check my alignment? I want to make sure, you know,
pointing in the right direction.
And of course, if you've hit a curb or if you've hit a huge pothole, if you've ever experienced a big thud, you might go very soon after that and get that alignment checked, because it's an incident such as that, like hitting a curb hard or hitting a huge pothole, that can jostle that alignment and get it, you know, out of specification, and then you need to reset it.
Okay, good to know. Those big thunks actually can make a difference in the operation of the
car. Yeah, and then, you know, all the miles driven after that are, you know, causing uneven tire wear.
Car questions. Welcome here at the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Zach Edwards, the owner of Ashland Automotive. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. Email from Boyd in Wolf Creek. He writes, what is the best method for getting weight over the rear wheels of a pickup to improve traction in winter weather?
Well, back in Minnesota, we did the sandbags. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. He has a Sprinter van, which, you know, we were seeing more and more of those. They also have the same problem with, you know, there's not a lot of weight on the back end there, and they're rear-wheel drive. And so anything you can put over that rear axle is going to help you out. But the sandbags, I think you can buy them, you know, at the hardware store or at a, you know, a general supply store in Medford. But I think they add a significant amount of weight, and just throwing a couple of those in the back is going to help out a lot. Another thing that really helps out with traction is getting your tires siped. And
siped?
Yeah, siping is a thing. I think Les Schwab does it. I was talking with Ross Johnston. Ross doesn't do it. And most tires nowadays come pre-siped, and that's spelled S-I-P-E-D, I believe. But that's where they make a slice in the tire perpendicular to the way that the tire rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is when that, as that tire is rolling and the weight of the car is applied to that little slice, it creates a little negative pressure or a suction, and it helps the rubber cling to the road. And personally, I've experienced just a huge difference in traction with a siped tire versus a non-siped tire. So back to, most tires nowadays have something similar engineered into the tread, and mm-hmm. so you don't need to go and get your tires additionally siped. But a tire expert at the tire store is going to be able to offer, some good advice as to how to increase the traction of a particular tire. But
this does sound familiar. I remember a couple of years ago doing TV news stories about the ice tires, which seem to have the same sort of rubber flaps that were meant to just give a little more grip there.
Yeah, it's kind of designed like off the paw of a gecko. The gecko has this, they use this natural design in their paw, and that's what helps them cling to vertical surfaces. And it's very similar how the two work.
Do not attempt to drive your cars up walls, though. This is not for vertical surfaces. I want to make that clear. How much of the repair work you do in winter has to do with putting vehicles back together after somebody drove poorly in slippery conditions? And I ask this not to be a wise guy, but because you're dealing with a clientele that generally resides on valley floors where there isn't much snow. And then they may go up and get Christmas trees or go skiing or whatever. And now they're driving in snow, which they're not used to. And I wonder how often you're putting cars back together because people have dinged them up a bit.
Yeah, we don't do very much body work at our shop. If it's light duty, we can do it. If they hit something hard underneath and bang up an oil pan or something mechanical, then we do it. But if there's fender damage or bumper damage, that type of work has to go to a body shop. It's a different skill set, different set of tools. There's usually paint involved nowadays, and mm-hmm. so, painting is a whole different science. So we don't do much body work, but I do wonder, with autonomous vehicles in the future, self-driving cars, what is the body shop industry going to look like with, the car accidents? The statistics show that this automation of driving is going to be a huge reduction in accidents.
Really?
Yeah.
Sorry, body shop guys. Yeah. We'll figure this out down the road. We are on the road with Zach Edwards talking about winter driving and winter car preparation. Join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Louise in Ashland writes, glad you have him as a guest. He's written several articles about car maintenance and its relationship to climate change, which I appreciate. So
Thanks, Louise.
Be good for the planet to keep your car in good tune.
Yeah, cars are, they're just polluting machines, and the federal government has mandated a massive amount of modifications to the vehicle over the last 25 years in an effort to reduce tailpipe emissions. I mean, there's 300 million cars on the road, maybe 280, something like that. So with each car making its own effort and the driver making their own effort to keep that car in good shape, it does make a huge difference on a global level. The check engine light is the thing that alerts the driver that there's something going on that's causing your tailpipe emissions, potentially causing your tailpipe emissions to exceed allowable levels. And so the government controls what can and can't turn that check engine light on. And oftentimes the check engine light is on, the driver doesn't notice any detectable difference in the way the car is driving. But that doesn't mean there's not a problem.
Something is going on when that light is on, so that's when I go to the shop. Let's talk about a couple of other things to get ready for winter. Batteries, for example. I mean, if you're up a bit in elevation or latitude and you're in colder conditions, do you need a different kind of battery for the winter?
So there's batteries. One measurement of a battery's power is cold cranking amps. Ironically, it's heat that really kills a battery, but cold is probably the second hardest thing on a battery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely a great idea to keep your battery, to get a look at your battery before the winter time. And again, you know, a good shop is going to do that for you. And they can put a load on that battery and test its ability to crank the engine to kind of simulate a cold climate condition.
So a test that it can potentially fail.
Right? Yep, it's a load test, they call it, and they just load it up and see how well it responds. And again, as we've learned over the years being in this industry, a battery generally is going to last you 6 years, a good, really high-quality name brand battery, 5 to 6 years. Sometimes you can get 7 or 8 years out of that battery. But once it's been 6 years, a lot of times we just, you know, have a conversation with the customer and say, hey, we've gotten 85, 90% of life out of this battery. You might consider just changing it right now so that we don't have to think about it for another 4 or 5 years. And when you phrase it that way, a lot of times it makes sense to the customer, like, hey, you know, just I'm going to prevent a bad day. I'm going to prevent an unexpected no start and just get ahead of it and change that battery.
Preventive maintenance, always a good thing. So one last question before we go, and that's about you mentioned changing coolant for the winter. What about engine oil if you're going to be in a colder place for the winter?
Yeah, thinner engine oil is a good idea. You know, it depends on the mileage of the car and the age of the car. Newer cars with newer engineering are very, very specific with what they require for engine oil. So it would never be advised to alter what the manufacturer recommends. But most manufacturers give an alternative engine weight for a colder climate. So again, your owner's manual is going to tell you, and your shop that you take your car to should know what type of oil to put in there, because there are different oils for different climates.
Okay, we've barely gotten into talking about car computers and stuff like that, but that's for another day. We can talk about self-driving cars at that point, too. Always something to talk about with you and cars. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive. Good to see you again on the Jefferson Exchange.
You too. Thanks, Jeff.